Hello, everyone. Let's start with the opening prayer. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine
Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Dearest Mother,
Beloved David,
Beloved David,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Oh. Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Amen.
Amen.
A short meditation. My Bible reading is from Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. And from chapter 15, verse 7 to 21. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another. If the world hates you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. But because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you. The servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. And a short thing from Romans 1. For I long to see you, that I may impart to you some spiritual gift, so that you may be established. That is, that I may be encouraged together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. And I want to read a dear friend's letter from David of March of 2017. David always started things off with dear friends. There are times in life when we question our purpose in living. Implicit in this search for meaning is the assumption that there is a purpose, even a very high one, in this rough and tumble existence here on earth. It has been the pursuit of many a philosopher and anyone who thinks on the deeper things of life as to what might be the answer to this ageless inquiry. This question simmered in my own life from early on and became a burning need in my late teens. Back then I had no answers nor even many hints as to where to look. So I instinctively took the path of Jainism and eliminated what it was not. When I was a dozen years in age, I rejected the religion I was born into, acknowledging the greatness of Jesus the man, but unaccepting of Christianity being the one and only way, and that all others were sentenced to eternal hell, damnation, and suffering. This I could not accept as just or compassionate of any God or good, any God in lowercase, he says, or God in uppercase. I considered the way of science for some time, and while I continued to hold it in high esteem, it quickly became apparent that it held the answers to many questions. But in the essentials to my quest, it admitted its inadequacy and sent me to the philosophy department. As I looked around at the people I knew, many fine individuals with good minds and leading virtuous lives, but I found no inspiration for what I could hang my hat on. And the thing is, this was not a casual inquiry done from the comfort of my armchair, which I did not have at the time. In high school, I paced like a caged animal. I was restless for who knows what. A something, something greater than what I had, what I knew and what I saw. It was only when I started reading about Eastern spiritual masters and Native American teachings that I felt a spark, a consuming interest that led me into new understandings. When I first read about reincarnation, I somehow knew that this was the truth, even though I did not have any direct memories of it. The evidence I had was my own inner knowing, and although not scientific, it was valid to me. This intuitive knowing was to become my guide in so many of the adventures that lay ahead. Part of what intuition told me was that I was on the right track, but I was missing the essential part. Reading books was not getting me to where I needed to be. That is when I read about a man meeting a guru. He described having tears, being bewildered, but knowing this was exactly right for him. I thought, that is what I need, to meet someone who knows about what I am going through, who can help guide me in the proper direction. Because right now I know something is missing, but I have no idea what. Following intuition brought me to my guru in a totally unexpected form as a Western woman. That is the thing about intuition. It is completely different means. It is a completely different means for knowing than the reasoning mind. Through her teachings, my life was being purified and my intuitive faculties awakened even more. I was taken on journeys wholly new to me, directions I would have never gone simply following my reasoning mind. I thank God and Guru every day for having and developing this faculty. He was an amazing writer, R. David. You know, one thing that I read was so interesting to me from Proverbs. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. This ability to have a friend you can trust, even to the extent that you can argue with. In fact, if you can have a strong argument or discussion with someone where nothing is left out of the argument out of respect for or fear for hurting someone's feelings, then you get to know a friend. You know, this is why men, maybe more than women, but men often express their friendship through joshing and cutting remarks sometimes, and then slow acknowledgement from one person to the other of different characteristics. Stuff is passed on. It's meant to adjust to a culture that's being created between you and many other friends as well, men sometimes. You know, I moved around a lot as a child, so I never had friends that I stayed with, because I was 2 years here, 1 year there, 3 years, almost four years in Yakima, and then 4 years in Pasco towards the end. I sympathize with what David went through. I think that being raised Catholic myself, I didn't have some of those doubts about my about what the philosophy was correct or the theology. I assumed the Catholic religion was correct, and for me anyway, I felt it very strongly. And I had an experience when I was about 6 years old that made me want to be a priest. And really from that point on, I knew that that's what I wanted to be, was a priest. So I really didn't have any desire to look at anything else, and I was expecting. And we had actually, strangely, a next door neighbor, or people behind us, I should say, the Monahan family. And they had 10 kids. My best friend at that time was my same age, Timmy. And he had an older brother who was, I think Timmy was the fourth from the end, so he was the seventh child, something like that. And his oldest brother was Mike, and he was in the seminary, in fact, was ordained within a few years of me knowing him. And I asked, of course, in those days, you ask how old people are, and it was 25. He was going to be ordained when he was 25. And then I learned more about what it takes to become a priest and the classes you have to take and the university level stuff, and how long it takes. And 25 was the year. So in my mind, it was the desire to be a priest was there, planted in my brain so strongly. And then I just had the on my horizon, 25. And I really didn't want to or think too much about critical. I was critical of many other things, but not about the religion. I was kind of enthralled with it. I loved the being an altar boy and being an assistant to the priest in the seminary. And so I loved so much about that. But again, that was another two-year stint with different friends. This summer, I'm going to be going to a reunion. And though I've met maybe two people out of my seminary days since leaving there in 66, 67, I've seen one person several times and then one other person once. And so this mostly I've not seen or kept in contact with people there at all. So I'm going this summer to a reunion, and they think it's going to be the last one because even the bishop is getting old and probably won't be any more after this. I missed my two favorite priests, unfortunately, my Latin teacher and the rector of the seminary, Father Ribble, which meant it was a Monsignor, and I just missed him. I guess he always came to every reunion, which were done every few years. I've never had those problems with thinking that, you know, here David said something that when I was first with him, he said that he used to pray to God that he'd have lots of friends and good grades in school. I always thought that seemed so strange to want friends. In that sense that he didn't have them, perhaps. I don't know. And or maybe it was difficult. He was shy. I had my own shyness, but it was very different in terms of friends of my own age. It was easy to fall in with people. One thing, it's like being a military brat, to a certain extent with my life, because I moved so much, that you learn to make friends quickly and to evaluate people quickly too. So, and when I was in the seminary, two of the people there were from the Air Force Base in Fort Fairchild Air Force Base in Spokane. So probably my closest friend, or certainly one of the closest, was about 6'8", and I was 4'11". And a good friendship and an interesting person. Many, many interesting people at the seminary. Many of them became priests. I'll learn more this summer. But you know, when we were first getting to know each other, all of us younger monks, as Mother called us, David was one of those kind of people you could easily, he liked the rough and tumble of friendship. He liked that male kind of thing. I know women do it too, but for us anyway, it was very comfortable for us to fall into that. And Michael McCurley and Steve Fisher and a few others all felt that very easily, fell into that very easily.
Me too, Larry. I was one of the boys.
You know, the Jews have a saying, thank God I was born a man. And I've always thought that. And I wonder if they weren't taught that prayer or that saying by their mother. You know, it makes me worry a little bit. And I think everyone in those days could see that the dog's body work was done by servants, perhaps, and by other work by the women in the family. Kate's mother, and I'm sure, you know, she was such a sweet soul. I don't think she had resentment, but maybe just her fact that she told us this, and maybe Kate can remember it better, but that she had to polish her brother's shoes. She had two older brothers, three actually. One died in the war. And she was the oldest daughter of two girls and four boys. And she and her sister, Betty, would do those chores around the house. And the boys would do their chores too. It wasn't like that they weren't supposed to do things. The girls were told to render personal service. And the boys were taught to render service to the whole family. I think we've come into a more righteous position in these days, accepting this, rather rejecting the notion of, though there are differences, that there is no greater value of one person to another. There's a difference between men and women, but there's both of equal value. David got along with women really well, too. He was naturally inclined. You know, he had no sisters, and there's just the three boys. So he didn't have it from that. But he liked the company of women, especially helping with doing things, moving forward with his work. Men tend to want something to do that they get control of or that they have wholly given to them. And women, right or wrong, see that they can help. And so if they fall into that role, and I think a majority of women do want to have children, they know they're going to be vulnerable during pregnancy and raising children. They need to have someone who's going to be with them through that. So they're just biologically determined to look for someone who will take care of her and her children. It's just natural. So it tends to breed certain traits. David was a very good friend. As I know many of you know, because there was a personal side to him and there was a divine side, and he could move easily between the two. Very comfortable being just a person talking amongst us all. And very comfortable when asked or requested in moving into the role of a counselor, a leader. David says he learned a lot about Swami Satchidananda, but he had many of his traits on the personal level. One of the biggest surprises I had one day at the ashram, maybe the second or third time I was there, was when Swamiji invited us into, well, it's an odd thing. We were coming back from the centenary hall. And I remember, so we're walking around the ashram, because I don't remember when that was built. 2004, I guess. Could have been then. Seems like it was earlier than that. Anyway, we were at the Ramana building. We had just walked with him to the Ramana building. And I don't remember the details, but it was as though he wanted us to come in and sit with him, or to, you know, feel welcome to come in. And my instinctive thought was, no, I mean, that's not what he means. I'm sure he's too much of a VIP to want that. But then I knew from that point on, I realized, no, God told me, no, he is comfortable being a friend. There's different ways of relating to a guru, to God. God is sometimes your mate, your spouse for some people. He can be your father or mother. And he can be a friend. Jesus was so much that way. He was first the best of friends to you. He's a tremendous model. And he was make effort to befriend everyone. Mother was always the guru. If those people who turned from her, or even in polite conversation, couldn't quite treat her as the teacher, he had no trouble with that. Other family members and other people, our family, you know, devotees, family members too, people who are in the devotees' families could move with Mother very easily. Mother was quite charming and quite sweet-natured, easy to talk to. I think I've told you before that both my mother and father were so well treated by her. She immediately reached out and made them feel comfortable. And I saw her do this with many other people. Bob Ladd's mother and father, I remember during those times too, were so sweet. And they were coming to service. As I remember quite a few times during those years. She couldn't have been nicer to them. In the movie, in the series, The Chosen, Jesus is invited to a Sabbath meal. And when he comes in the room, everyone's surprised and a little shocked to see him there because they had no idea he was coming. And there was only five people they're told, so he was the sixth at the table. But as Mary Magdalene is the person having the Sabbath, she's very shocked and shy around him. She's introducing the people around the table, and of course, they call him Rabbi, and she said, do you know them? And he said, yes, they're my students. Two of them were his students, two were not. And he said, I hope they've been well behaved for you. But they stood very respectfully. I remember so much, because though I maybe have been like that with teachers in regular school, in the seminary days, when Father Ribble especially came in the room, everyone stood very respectfully. I hope I'm right in this. Some people might not like him. He had some strict aspects to him. But we all loved him very much. My memory is, anyway. I certainly did. Father Schiller was the spiritual director. Also, very much respect for him. Everyone in the rooms, in the hallways, he taught the religion classes. Everyone deferred to him. I remember one day that he came back with one of the other priests, and they were both smiling and so happy. And then we all heard he'd hit a hole in one, golfing that day. We all knew he golfed. That wasn't a surprise at all. And I don't think he got to go very often, but he did enough to get his handicap down. So important to stay loyal through thick and thin. And to make sure that your friends know you're loyal. Never leave them doubting. But why is that? That they know they can depend on you. It's because you'll You'll debate and you'll argue with them. That's a friend relationship. I never argued with mother. And I didn't muse about things philosophically. I would ask her questions. And I would learn from her. But David and I could muse about things, how things worked and how, in our teachings, how to figure things through and figure things out. We could have differences of opinions, and we could express them clearly.
So, Larry, I'm just thinking, I mean, partly with mother, it was an age thing. She was our parents' age.
She was our grandparents' age.
Yeah, I guess it's true. Yeah. So we had that respect because of that. But here you've read where Jesus says, because I am your friend and I'm to his disciples. Now, very likely he was a peer with them in terms of ages. And then you've talked about David had us, he gave that same type of friendship. It wouldn't have, I mean, we can't even imagine mother like that, really. And yet she had some friends who were tended to be her age. But can you talk a little bit about that, maybe, about God's play in that, why we, perhaps we devotees needed that different relationship. We needed a different relationship than the friend relationship. Maybe because we are so casual in our generation.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, she really turned us around, didn't she, on things like marriage and respect and dressing nicer and all of those things that were normal to her generation. And everyone in our parents' generation thought they'd lost everything. Everything was thrown away, but mother found she could pull it out of us and we would respond to it.
And that might be why we had such a relationship with our guru.
Yeah.
She was, that God gave her the role to help us to have that kind of respect and not the over familiarity. And anyways, just made me think of it while you were talking about that.
Yeah, she was just unique in my life, I'm sure in yours too. And I don't know how to put it other than, you know, we had the notions, as David says in what I read from him, is that he was looking for a guru, and it was for surprise to see it was a Western woman. But that's the end of that whole issue. The surprise of that went quickly because she was in control of my emotions, of my feelings, my inner, so much of me within. I think that's, you know, she just was right within me as I didn't think of it then. At that time, I thought of her as an external, you know, I know she's, we talk about authority, but she's an authority of as a teacher. No, for all many of us, it wasn't that she was the boss that we wanted to do. We wanted to make her happy. You know, Peggy Dietz used to drive Master around, and she said that so beautifully, I can't improve on it. It was our greatest joy to make him happy, to do things, anything that he would make him happy, that would please him. So I've told this story before, but I'll tell it because it reflects so much of what I learned from Father Rebel, who was the rector at the seminary. It's an interesting story, and I reflect back on it so many times. So we were on a seminary out in the boondocks in Colbert, Washington, way up, no, not way up, but say half an hour north of Spokane. anymore. And so we never saw the bishop. The bishop, when you were in the seminary in Spokane, which historically that's where they'd been, they moved out to where I was there in Mater Clary. It was called Mother of the Clergy in Colbert, just before I joined. And so when the bishop came one time, his name was Bishop Topol, an interesting man. I met him on the stairs he was going down, and we kids were going up. And Father Ribble was with him, and maybe one other priest. And of course, we stood to the side to let him go by, but he stopped, and he talked to each one. I was at the top of the stairs at the platform there, when he started to go down, and he reached out to shake my hand. I thought, of course, if you know anything about bishops, which if most, so many people would know from my age, but I never had been around one. And I was supposed to kiss his ring, of course. This is something that you do with popes and bishops. Everyone knows that except for me. And Father Ribble now and Bishop Topol never tipped to me at all. It wasn't until the next day that I learned. And even then, implicitly, never said a thing. And then he walked down, and he was so sweet to us. He had a very sweet smile. They walked downstairs. We walked up. And the next day, Father Ribble decides, you younger kids really need to know a little bit about proper, and it's. I realize it's a mistake. We should have done this earlier with you. I didn't realize this. But we should teach you what's proper to do with bishops and popes and cardinals. And so he demonstrated it to us all. He says, well, pretend as though I'm the bishop. And of course he got a laugh from that, from the other priests as well. And he just had one of these. I was a first year student, so he had one of the second year students come up, and a couple of them, two as I remember. And he just said, so what do you do? So he offers you his hand. If his hand is vertical, then you turn the hand and kiss the ring, and he'll comply. So let's just practice that. So he practiced. He didn't pull me out and point it out to me that I had made a mistake. That was not in his. I think maybe Bishop Topol said no discipline on this. Maybe, but Father Ribble was like that to a great extent. Anyway, very respectful. He took it on himself as having not taught us well. But I learned that day. I knew I'd done not that I'd done anything wrong, but that I learned something. It's something I needed to know. All these gurus in our lives, they call them upa gurus, and it means upa means nearby, close to. So in your normal life, you realize sometimes. Your mother is your first guru, of course, and that's upa guru in a sense. My grandfather, I very greatly respected on my mom's side, never met my dad's father. And then a couple of the priests. That really moved me when Swami, when I realized, I puzzled my way through what was Swamiji suggesting, that I could come into his rooms with him. And not privately, he was, and there were several of us there. But since I didn't tumble to it, he just walked in. And from that point on, it was very clear, not that I could be chummy with him, but that I could treat him like a friend. I was welcome to come in and be one of the guys there, one of the boys there. And I started taking advantage of that. He was truly a saint. Truly a saint. It was he who brought it to my consciousness. Never again, he didn't say it to me. But I just caught myself, as I've discussed before, that when he was talking one day, I caught myself thinking other thoughts and really having high understanding of something else. It wasn't what he was talking about externally. And from that point on, I realized, I went back and reviewed things with Mother, and I realized that she was doing the same thing, but that he was talking to me inwardly at the same time as he was talking to me outwardly. Such a sweet thing to learn. You know, we think this is our own thoughts. We think, oh, I'm just wool, as Papa called it. He had these English terms, wool gathering. So you feel bad. You're not listening to what's wrong with you saying on the outside because you're thinking of something. And I realized, no, this, what I'm learning inwardly, usually evaluating something or trying to understand something, I realized he was doing it because it always happened around him. When my internal dialogue would be directed upwardly and it was high-minded and it was revelation of a sort, it was revelatory. Mother was different than that. She was the boss. She was the authority. Wanted to please her. But she was so loving. You know, this is the thing. The way she called you honey, or she would say, she would smile at you when you came to hug her or to come into her orbit. She would look at you with such incredible love. And David, in his latter years, was very much giving that same loving look at your soul and never criticizing, only supporting. Mostly. I know that many people have had seen the other side of David's sterner side, and I've seen it too. In my own experience, but because he wasn't my guru, I didn't accept it the same way, and I didn't react to it in the same way. No, in fact, to have Mother look at you was amazing. The story of Jesus is so interesting too, isn't it? The Bible verses that we all love so much. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you, that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another. If the world hates you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. Just an amazing story of the Christ. Any other comments about friendship or friends or relationships?
Well, I just remembered this thing that happened with David once. Mm. I think in one of his talks, he'd been talking about how mother had corrected him. It might have been that incident with her checkbook or something.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the only one.
Yeah. And I had the thought that, well, maybe, you know, I would like David to correct me, because then I would feel like I was truly in the same category or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then very soon after that, someone asked me to get him some water. And I was in a pretty uplifted state, and I was having trouble just doing that task. But I took the glass, which it had something else in it, and I filled it with water, and then I brought it back, and I got corrected immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And
you ask and you get.
Yeah.
You ask and you receive.
But 99, other than that one time, David was always very gentle with me and kind and patient, even when I was asking him the same question again, or, you know, can you go over that technique again? He was, yeah, that was the only time that I can remember being really.
Master even asked Sir Yuki's word. No, please do it again, you know, because it's a strange story with him that he was, you know, really, he was taken to task many times.
Yeah.
And yeah, he wasn't that way himself, and nor was mother like that in general, although she could be with some people. But of all people to do it, it was master. We just can't. What's It's very humble and reflective of his humility that he tells these stories. Here he is, a great guru himself, fully established in the West, and he's telling stories about his own guru that show him not in the best light.
I had heard all those, you know, I had read all those stories. But yeah, that just came to mind, and I had not thought of it in a really long time.
Interesting, yeah. Those are really, what it does is it shows the heart connection with you and him, doesn't it? Because it hurts you so much that you didn't please him, right? Yeah, or that he had to say something, or that he did say something for whatever reason God was moving through him. Yeah.
There was the woman at the ashram, Anyways, one time she took me by surprise because she was telling me about how Swamiji was really telling off this woman that had done something. And that wasn't usual. But she said, oh, I wish it had been me. And I said, what? Well, he was looking right at her, and she got all that attention as he told her off.
Wow, that's a good way of saying it.
Isn't that interesting that she would see it that way? And because I don't think I would have ever called down some discipline by mother or Swamiji or David. I would rather I'd rather not have that. But for her, that was something she wanted.
Anybody else? I can tell there's somebody who wants to.
Judy, you're muted.
Sorry, Joe. The most wonderful thing about David and Mother was that the love was so great that any admonishing never turned us away.
Mm-hmm.
It was never even a thought. It didn't matter if something hurt. It didn't matter because that love was so amazing with both of them. Absolutely.
Right.
So.
No, you torture yourself. You don't need them to. All they have to do is show a little bit of displeasure, and you're much harder on yourself because the goal is to please them. And if you have displeased them, it's the opposite of what you intend. You've got to. Sometimes it's burning, though, that it really, you just have to endure it. You know, the loyalty thing then comes into play, doesn't it? Then you just stay loyal. And Mother can even do something wrong. You know, in the sense that she could say something that happened and you know it didn't happen that way. You were there, for instance. If the sun is not out and she says it is, you treat it that way. You're supposed to treat it that way that it is.
I don't remember what it was now, but I do. God just told me. There was just something that David had thought Mother said, but it wasn't Mother who said it. But I couldn't care less if David said it was Mother, and Kate said to me too, "Oh, Judy, you know, you have to set it straight." It's like, nope. You know, God is God.
No, God will tell. God will act through you sometimes. To talk to somebody, even a guru or a teacher. But, you know, it certainly never happened with me with Mother. But I can certainly see. I saw some people disagree with her on things, and it was fine. She accepted it very well, of course. She'd argue the point. She wouldn't. Now, with David, she didn't argue the point. The issue was not brought up again. You know, she didn't answer David's questions. She went after directly at David. So that's very interesting. But she knew she had him. She knew that whatever she did wouldn't take him off, wouldn't steer him away.
That's the bottom line, isn't it? That's the bottom line. That's why Mother or David could.
But maybe she was testing it that way too. It's difficult to know what the guru knows, because the guru doesn't know a lot of things and doesn't have any curiosity about things. But she could see from the result of that, she was testing that strength of that bond too. Because if it really did take him off the path, well, then she needed to know that sooner rather than later. But we have to stop thinking of gurus as being crafty. You know, they're not. They really are just doing God's work, especially when working with disciples. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that relationship that we just described is really different, isn't it? You know, it really is. The relationship is, I want to only please this person. So if they're the boss, that's fine. If they're this, that's fine. It doesn't matter. What, you know, you want. Now, people will go crazy currying favor with the guru and wanting to be their best friend or to be the one that they always turn to. That's natural. I mean, we all fight for that. That's part of being human. But the guru was in charge. Mother was always in charge, and so she.
With me, it was that little saying that is something like, to be in his presence, nothing wanting, nothing on your lips, you know. Just to be in their presence, that's all.
Now, how many of us have this memory of having a question before you meet Mother and then having, even if you could review the question, you'd realize it just doesn't matter.
It didn't matter at all.
Sometimes if it was personal or family or things, of course. But many times things you thought were important one day, when you're in the presence of a great saint, they answered in a way that is satisfactory, or they show you the question itself is not as important as what they're giving. Nothing is more momentous than spending time with the guru.
You know, I could mention a problem or a situation I was in through an email, but never in their presence.
I see.
Interesting,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, I wrote to Mother a lot in those days, and I would every once in a while mention something that was going on. Yeah, and then you're right. It was a different kind of relationship, different kind of medium. Yeah.
With Mother, I never wrote to her about any problems. I don't remember that because I still remember just getting a little card and writing, "Dearest Holy Mother," and that was it. I had nothing else to say. Was
Well, it's going to be so nice to have Swami Muktananda here. Kate's been so busy. She's busy throughout the day with phone calls, just handling one small detail after another with the arrangements and so.
Thank you, Kate.
She wouldn't have it any other way, though, would you, Kate?
We know such a privilege. And the interesting thing is that we have... About half the people are unknown to me.
Yeah.
So that's what actually is.
By the way,
a lot more work than if it was just our group.
It's going to really be fun. We've got a bunch of Sufis and hippies. And
but it's
going to be really fun.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting because the many.
Tell about the story. The woman who sent her aunt, who sent her niece up. Let's tell people about that. That's, you don't have to mention names, but it's such a wonderful thing. Because we don't know her.
No.
Yeah, so it's really very interesting. So this one woman's coming up here because her aunt wants her to have these experiences. So she's flying her up from Texas and paying for the flight and place to stay. I'm not sure where she's staying or anything. But anyway, here's a gift I can give my niece. I know she likes these kinds of things. Yeah. And she knew probably enough about Swamiji. I don't know.
So a number of these people, there was a man named Sufi Sam, or his name was Sam Lewis, I think, and he was in San Francisco when Papa came to America. So Papa was here with Mother in Seattle, and when he went down to San Francisco, he met this man. And then this man went on to have students, and they eventually, I guess he went to an Anandashram at some point, and so, and I, in fact, I know he did, and then his students did, but he has a Sufi I don't want to say inclination. He somehow worships through the Sufi path. And so, but some of these young people consider Swami Muktananda their guru. Mm-hmm. So they've gone to Anandashram. So they have a long association with the ashram. So they got, they probably saw the Vision magazine. That's how they got word of that we were organizing things. So some coming up from San Francisco, some from Oregon, and I think a couple from Washington here. So that'll be interesting to have another group with us who has a slight, you know, different practice, but we all have Ram Nam. So we're kind of two different offshoots from Papa. So that'll be interesting to see. And
I think it's going to be fun.
Hmm.
I really do. Everyone will be on their best behavior.
That's the plan.
I'll be busy in the kitchen so I can't get into too much trouble.
Jill is feeding us, so she's doing a lot too.
I better help you in there so I keep out of trouble too.
There's a Martha and a Mary aspect of each one of us, so we get to do... There'll be plenty of time to be close to the teacher. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I So we'll be, or will we have this next week, Kate?
Huh?
Will we have this next week? What have we got for schedule?
No, but the following week we will not, because we'll be with Swamiji that night.
Yeah. Right. So next week, and then there won't be one, and then we're back in the sequence after he goes on a Monday, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to broadcast with Swamiji on Wednesday, the 21st?
He will be at a home.
Oh, that's right. No, yeah. Sorry.
We can't. Yeah. Yeah, I think they're going to be recording it, so it's something we can send out later. But the home ones are a little different. Yeah, we'll just have to see.
Yeah.
How it goes.
Okay. Let's say our closing prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Searching in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
My communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Peace. Bliss. Amen. Let's meditate for a few minutes and I'll turn it off.